Hello and welcome to The Undermined, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonko, your host from makingcomputerdothings.com. Let us begin. Hello and good evening or morning, depends on where you live. My guests this week are Antiga. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Haupen, returning from last week. Hi, Hau.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be back.
And MacRave, returning from multiple times. Hi.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, and get out the stuff that's probably most interesting to a large portion of our audience. I'm talking about, of course, the gossip part. Last time I called out a little the pylon show for, attacking Antiga personally, which wasn't a nice thing to do. But a little bird told me that has been resolved since. Antiga, would you mind enlightening us of with the details?
Sure. I mean, I won't say much about it. You know, that's mostly a private conversation between Artosis and myself. But we had a chance to talk, and I think we've resolved it. So I don't think it'll be an issue further.
That's great to hear. And also, during this week's Bylon show, the SSEIT results were mentioned, which was nice, and it was just a brief second, but any exposure for this community is good enough. Although the winner's name was pronounced Dan Grant, so there is room to improve.
Wait, that's not his name?
Sorry?
It's Gant. G-A-N-T. No, but it'll be kind of a funny thing. I wonder how many weeks that'll take to die off, is everyone calling him Grant.
It's not like we don't have enough Dan jokes already.
I'm going to keep calling him Dan Grant. It's just going to keep happening.
Yeah, I propose establishing the Dan Grant, which is a scholarship for talented young AI developers.
They could also make a bot named Dan Grant, and it plays similar to Purple Wave.
Yeah. So with that, let's discuss the SSEIT results. And Dan Gant, the author of Purple Wave, has won. I phrased that very weirdly. So Purple Wave won, and the author of that is Dan Gant. And congratulations for him. It was a very nice set of matches. What do you think of the finals? I'm curious to hear your opinions.
I mean, I think my thoughts are pretty simple, so I'll begin. I think the results were expected, but I didn't expect the difference between the two would be that big. Some games Purple Wave made it look easy, but I know it took a lot to optimize and trying to improve every bit you can. That's my simple thoughts.
I think that it's interesting to note how often games are decided just because of Dark Tone. I don't know how many games, Lacutus, Banana Brain, Purple Wave, versus whatever opponent they played against, was decided because they made DTs and the opponent has no reaction if they don't see like a Citadel or a Templar Archives. They just don't make detection and just die to Dark Templars like instantly. And Purple Wave did that multiple times. Lacutus smashed Sida because of it as well.
And a big shout out to Lacutus as well, because I think he fought very well. It's a shame that Purple Wave just had a build that countered him, but otherwise it felt like a close match, I think. Maybe with different lineups, Locutus could have won this, I don't know.
I think a lot of those games were really a lot closer than we think.
Yeah, they were, and really the one of the interesting things about the strategy with it is that, you know, 4-gate is really easily countered by DT, because you really can't get detection or buy anything else except for goons in time, or it's very difficult to. And so it's really the case that Lacutus tried to leverage that a build that he's really known for and has done well with previously, to kind of an extreme degree, and got a little bit punished for it. And you know, maybe Liquidus will do have a little more spread into other strategies and openers in the future. But of course, very well done by both of them. Their PvP ability on both ends is excellent.
And I feel the bot versus bot meta is a little bit harsher. Well, not the meta game, but the shifting of the meta game, because in human games, when you come up with a build that the opponent is not prepared for, he can still recover from it. In bot games, they just die, because I haven't coded that, sorry. And I don't know, do you think it can be somehow countered, do you think bots can react to stuff they never seen before, effectively, I mean?
I don't think that's possible. Like, we look at Crazy OP, he basically just came into the tournament where nobody dealt with, like, reasonable cannon contain, and just dominated because of it. That was the only reason he did really well. Like, the bot's good otherwise. Like, it's got good worker defense, and it's got, like, you know, proper tech and carrier usage and all that. But most of the reason it did well was strictly because nobody coded for it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible. Surely it is, but I don't know how to code that or prepare for anything like that. I mean, you can prepare for certain elements, but yeah, that's it.
I mean, there's a lot of aspects to this. In bot development, countering things that don't currently exist in the bot meta is very difficult. You're spending a lot of time on something that may or may not occur. And whether that's hard coding or computationally speaking, you know, if you're doing machine learning and training to play, you know, if the opponent has one more strategy that and they go from one to two, that doubles easily your training time. So an opponent that has, you know, multiple strategies is much, much more difficult computationally to counter. And, you know, we've talked about with AlphaStar, the estimating the amount of money that they've spent as far as training and things like this. You know, and they have to select a certain builds and certain things to try and counter and to train against. And there are limits. You know, and it's part actually of anti-machine play for chess, is to do things that are so unusual that it increases the expense exponentially of the bot authors to deal with specific things.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I find that people seem to overestimate the efficiency of machine learning. Like, compared to human learning, when, okay, I made a mistake, next time I know how to do better, it's very far from that. And yeah, like 200 years of games made AlphaStar what it is, but for a very narrow subset of this game or game space.
Yeah, and basically what you can do by running a very wide selection or purposely unusual strategies is to increase their expense and training time to a point that it becomes unreasonable. And I expect Serral on the SC2 side, when he eventually plays AlphaStar for real, to do something similar, where he brings a prepared set of strategies that are unique enough and unusual enough that it's unlikely that they have trained for them. And if they have, they have spent so much money and time in doing so that they deserve to win. You know, it's one of those aspects of well-studied anti-bot play from the chess worlds.
I think part of it too was that the SC2 players were playing the play style that the bots excel at. Like, if you were to play Liquidus and you try to beat him in Goon versus Goon, I don't think you're ever going to win that as a human. Like, if you straight up just said, okay, I'm not going to build Reavers or anything, I'm just going to build Goons, I'm sorry, you're going to lose. And in the SC2 world, they're like, okay, well, let's make Disruptors and Stalkers, and let's try to out-micro infinite APM bot, like, okay, that's not going to work. You're just going to lose, and it's going to look stupid. So they're going to find strategies, like harassment strategies or whatever that the bot's not prepared for, like Antia is saying, and just automatically win because of it.
Yeah, it's like getting in a weightlifting match with a forklift. You're not going to win it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very true, too, because it's a machine. It's going to win it.
And I understand that sentiment quite clearly. I dealt with, I guess my practice partner for BSL actually played Makudas a lot in PvP, and he tried to beat it with Goodens, and it was an exercise in frustration for him. He ended up losing 22 games in a row and gave up.
Wow, that's impressive that he actually made it to 22 games. I would have gotten through the first game and said, well, I'm just going to DT drop.
Right. But really, he thought, you know, he's like, I can do it. I believe I can outdo it at its speciality. And I'm not sure that that's possible. Perhaps a professional player could, but this is, you know, a 2300 MMR rated player, and he couldn't do it. Within that exact sphere, you know, playing 4-gate Goon versus 4-gate Goon.
Yeah, a few days ago, I was trying the Shallow 2 strategy as a human versus Banana Brain, and I was bad, and I gave up after maybe two or three games. So I can hardly imagine how someone can, you know, play 22 games and still kept going. So it's
I admire his persistence truly, and it's a little bit goes back to my college years when I played League of Legends competitively. This is part of my dark quest, yes, and this is something I will never do again, and I'm sure of it, because it's losing just 5 or 10 matches in a row. It's even if you know if it's just practice, it's so frustrating that you just want to flip the table.
Was it a dark time because you were playing League of Legends, or is it a dark time because of something else?
Yeah, that was the joke that I played.
Okay, good.
times were bad. I was stooped so low that I comforted myself with League of Legends or something like that. Yeah, I think it's a man versus machine world. It's at the stage compared to when people raised steam locomotives with horses, because they thought that, oh, the horses are so fast and no machine can ever beat them, and they did. And the question does not pop up nowadays. It's a stage of AI is maybe in a early industrial revolution.
It's a pretty apt comparison. You know, that a lot of the things that the bots excel at are like Goon versus Goon, Stalker versus Stalker, Micro, especially range unit wars in the open with no terrain. You approach that with caution if you're playing versus that as a...
Yeah, and more and more parts will be added. Speaking of contribution, last time we talked about the wiki page for common information or helpful resources for bot development. Since then, people have began to work on the Liquipedia page for the SSC AIT bots, or StarCraft bots in general, and I think that's a great thing. And I would like to ask everyone to contribute at least his own bot, his or her own bot, with a short description, because it's helpful to get exposure, and it's another point to collaborate and just have community related things.
So I had emailed Sir Tiki about I guess the issue with the CU bot, who was the same author as Kill All, you know, sort of issue that we had going on there. And part of his solution to this was, okay, well, we needed information on bots. Well, this is a good opportunity for us to just say, all right, everyone that has a bot and wants to play in this competition, you now have to tell me more about it. And so, you know, kill two birds with one stone, I thought it was a great idea. And I got my page up yesterday. It took me only like 10 minutes to get going. So it's really easy to add. I think it's a great idea that we share this information.
Yeah, and especially because I think the Discord is the main contact or main hub of the community right now, but I completely understand that not everyone wants to participate in that. For example, JSCOT is famous for not having any social media presence, and he's quite a prominent bot author, and I can totally respect his decision.
Yeah, I hope he decides to make a Liquipedia page, though. I'm not sure how he feels on that, but I think it would be really useful to have Steamhammer on there.
Yeah, just with a link or something. But yeah, it's his decision.
Then I also think in general it's very helpful to indicate the version of the BW API the bot is using, because, you know, at the early stages of my journey, at one point I was trying to find bots with the 4.1.2 version, because otherwise I was using Chaos Launcher back then. Otherwise, you know, the Chaos Launcher can't just inject two bots with different BW API versions. So I think, in particular, I hope every bot author, if he or she ever creates a Liquipedia page, I hope that he or she can include the version there as well.
Yeah, it would be good to have some library pages too. I mean, if I have the free time, I can try to get some from my library. What promises there?
Oh yeah, the libraries. We touched that point, I think, last cast or the one before that. I don't remember exactly, but yeah, there are quite a few libraries that has been widely used. And I'd like to mention the BWEM Community Edition, which is actively developed by multiple people, it seems. I think it's a good thing. I think it's great that we have collaboration in that side. The problem with this, of course, is it's all volunteer work. So if no one feels like developing it today, then it won't get developed. There is no strong push for that. What do you think? How can we improve that, or how what path we should or can take to move this forward?
Well, it's hard. You know, most things are motivated by you know, some sort of financial incentive or desire to help the community or things like that. And, you know, updating wiki pages is something that someone that's not really skilled in the AI side could really take on and do really good with. And it'd be really helpful. It's hard to talk to developers into sitting down and doing a lot of updating unless there's an incentive like tournament participation for them.
Yeah, but could something like a Patreon for this work? Because I remember that there were talks about hiring someone part-time with a fully paid position for SSC IT, for maintenance and stuff. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. And as you said, people are motivated by finances, and there is nothing wrong with that.
I think it can also be pushed by a need for something. If we feel that BWEM is actually causing every bot to struggle and actually be weaker and in a worse position than it should be, then there might be a push to fix it. There might be a push to improve it. I know one of the weaknesses of BWEM is there are certain maps that it crashes on, and how it determines choke point geometry is a little bit weird. It can draw really zigzagged lines for, you know, a choke point that is at a perfect 0-degree angle, like it's exactly horizontal. So there may be a need for it in the future, but I don't think that there's much of a push for it right now. Maybe down the road there will be.
Well, that being said, feel free to tell us every library you use and the gripes with it, because just shedding some lights and well, promoting those libraries could do some good.
I mean, in general, the BWEM community is more turned out to be a good thing for me. Just to give you an example, previously, well, I think still at this point, iron does not wall in circuit breakers, but with the BWEM community, it's actually possible, at least in TVP. In TVZ, the wall can be done, but the position is, I would say, still pretty horrible. But my point is, I appreciate the work people put into the BWEM, and I think the way forward for library like this is, I would say, at least it depends, well, it's need-based. For example, and something could be done to set up the wall at the natural, because at this point, BWEM, it's not guaranteed that the wall, initial wall, is set up at the natural. So I think, you know, there's some need. This obviously can help, because if you as a Terran and you do early expansion versus Protoss, for example, if you don't wall off, then the Zealot bombs can pretty much kill you pretty easily. So yeah, that's my 2 cents.
I think BWM, it has some really good wall positions, but sometimes you actually just don't want like a full wall off. Like most bots these days don't actually rush you, and the wall doesn't actually help you. But if you had something that minimized movement like Sida does, it's, you know, it's optimal to have it that way.
That's actually something I worked on. I got to settings of it does not guarantee circling tightness or zealot tightness, for example. Rather, its purpose is to force the opponent's army to go through some certain narrow chokes created by the wall at the natural. So you will have an easier time to defend the early pressure, especially if you do fast expansion. In the early stages of the game, your army size is not that big compared to your opponent. If the opponent doesn't do early expansion, rather it tries to, you know, reach a sizable army ASAP, then yeah, it becomes useful.
That was partially my push for when I made B-Web, is we didn't always want these perfect tight chokes that BWM made. We want sometimes to just narrow the choke and just make it difficult for units to move.
Yep, exactly the idea.
The shared libraries save a lot of work and time and effort in a map, especially things like map analysis, wall ins, things like this. Everybody has to deal with these problems, and so everyone writing their own from the ground up repeatedly is sort of a waste of time and energy. That said, you know, oftentimes the solutions may not do the very specific thing that you need. And we're actually seeing this with Steamhammer and Jay, that he's writing his own map analysis system.
And then I hope that with him making a new terrain analysis, that it not only is free to use, but also that it's just, I guess, more refined, because he does spend a lot of time with his features. I'm excited to see what it's like, because it's better than BWM. I may switch to it if it's easy to use.
Yeah, time will tell. It's still sort of in its early stages, from what he said on his blog over on the Satirist. You know, and of course, like all first generation systems, it sounds like it's a little crude, but that refinement comes with time. So.
And then another aspect for especially library development is just porting it to different languages, because most developers are working in C++, I feel, but there are more and more people working in other languages. Most prominent example being Purple Wave, which is written in Scala, and having libraries for those languages would be also beneficial. I'm 100% aware that this is like the worst kind of repetitive labor, and no one wants to do it, but still. And let's add a side note here, because I think Python will emerge also as a programming language, because a lot of AI stuff, a lot of deep learning stuff especially, is tailored to Python and has a lot of Python languages. I'm not talking about StarCraft AI, but AI in general. And I don't know how to encourage people to work on those, the porting, I mean.
I think one way to look at this problem, I actually used Python a few months ago, trying to do some, you know, basic reinforcement learning stuff. So the problem was it's a situation where you have 5 marines, and the opponent also has 5 marines, and so each of your marine has a set of actions to choose from. For example, move up, move down, left and right, and shoot. Then you try to use the reinforcement learning to increase the win rate versus the opponent, for example. Then I think it took about awfully a million or so games for the win rate to go from maybe the initial 30% to maybe 80% at the end. But yeah, I mean, my point is, I personally found this problem very interesting, and that actually can give me some insight, for example, on how I should code my marine micro in the game in general, for my own bot, obviously. And there are certainly other things that one can achieve. For example, how to, you know, for example, get the, you know, get your first 5 marines out, I mean, production, as fast as possible. You know, you can change certain things, for example, when to build your SCV, when to build your racks, when to build your supply depot, things like that. So, you know, problems like that, I mean, for a bot author, if you want to be competitive, certainly there, at least it's interesting to me, because if you get the Marines out seconds earlier, then that might change the game outcome completely. So, yeah.
And with reinforcement learning or any kind of machine learning, I find that the what to learn or what to test out is almost as big as a problem as how to do it, because you don't know. Everything is so interconnected that everything can affect everything else.
As we've been discussing, it is lasagna code, or you know, code where you touch something in one layer and all you have to end up having to rebuild all the other layers.
Well, I think the term lasagna code is referring to over engineered enterprise system mostly, but maybe somewhat applicable here. And it's like you want to win a car race, and you try out every kind of paint for your car first, but you don't know if that affects your race performance, and you just lose 10 more matches with yellow paint. Does that mean that you should not paint your race car yellow? So things like that. It's a large array of uncertainty.
Bots are often made with what is fun to the author at the time, not necessarily what is purely performance related. And so things like, you know, we're talking about car color, but stylistic differences in build orders and trying to nuke people is often very entertaining as a bot project, even though not necessarily competitive.
Oh yes, there is the shiny factor too. Sometimes I just want to work on some problem because I like it. Speaking of coding, did you see the Cherry Viz? I hope I pronounced it as intended. Cherry's library that has been open sourced not long ago. It's basically a replay viewer and analyzer released by the Cherry Pie team. So I guess no one tried that out.
I have not opened it and tried it. It's on my list of stuff to do here once AIST is concluded. Take a deep dive into it, but I'm not there yet. There's a lot going on.
I haven't taken a look either.
Yeah, same boat. I'm in the same boat as Antigua. Probably after AIST, I will take a look.
I almost got it working. So, yeah, that's not a topic that we will discuss this time, I feel. Regardless, big thanks for the Cherry Pie team, or don't know what's the team called behind Cherry Pie. for open sourcing this. I'm sure it will be a useful tool in the future. And do you want to say anything about AIST, Antiga? Because that's the participation is closed now, right?
Yeah, so registration is complete. Bots are due on the 28th, which I'm quite excited for to see what people come up with. And then matches will start shortly thereafter. And once that's concluded, I will have the versus human show match there at the end. And it's going to be an extremely competitive year. All the hardcore Protoss registered, with the, you know, including Purple Wave and Lacutus and McRae. And on the Terran side, of course, we have Halpan here and a few others, as well as Lita's there. The Zerg side is a little weaker. It's just Steam Hammer and TSTMU. I would have really hoped to have seen Killbot or Proxy, especially as well, because right now it's a mostly Protoss and Terran term with only two Zergs.
Speaking of replays, do you do replay analyzing, either just looking at the replay of your bot or any bot and just concluding that something that you implemented works, or like in a more serious aspect, having a set of metrics and evaluating your bot's performance according to some strict criteria?
Well, I think most of the time I just manually do it by eyeballing the replay and find out what my bot did well and what it didn't, and trying to improve, maybe spot some bugs as well. But I think a few months ago, once again, when I was working on the continual online evolution planning algo. So the forward model was required there, and so I did some number crunching. So I recorded at what time so for example at a certain time 5 minutes mark I record down the opponent's army composition. For example, he had 5 zealots, 10 goons, so on and so forth. At another timestamp, maybe 15 minutes, record this such information again. So the idea is that with the data collected, I can build a regression model to predict what the opponent army would look like for example 25 minute mark, or starting from a game fresh. Then if you don't observe anything in that game at 5 minute mark, you can make your prediction based on your regression model or your observed data. So in this regard, you can help the bot to decide if I should move out, or because the opponent army is weak at this point, or if I should keep building my army, so on and so forth. So this is the sort of more serious approach I took on the replay analysis. And the other scenario I can think of is the time I worked with Antiga. He helped me while we together look at some of the replays and discuss, hey, what can be done, etc. So there's a joint effort there.
Yeah, I've done a lot of replay analysis over the years. Both on the sort of semi-professional StarCraft player side, and a lot for bots and for multiple authors. I think I've helped both to hear a fair bit with some of that stuff. One of the things that really helps is having someone who's played a fair bit of StarCraft themselves, at least a decent level. They don't have to be an expert, but if they're decent, they see things that often bot authors miss. just by eyeballing and checking through the replays. Oftentimes you'll be able to identify, two to three things in every game that the bot author could likely improve, that you just pick up at a glance, that they're really not hard to find. When you start getting past things that are easily visible, you start getting into using tools like BWChart, for example, to track game time, units produced, some of the macro stuff, and that can help you find things that maybe you would miss with the naked eye. And then, of course, you can do a whole lot of different stuff with Excel and parsing data out of replays to look for stuff as you need. It really depends the level of depth that's required. But frankly, most bot games, we're starting to get into more sophisticated techniques being required towards the higher end of bots. But most bot games, you can just sort of eyeball and have a pretty good idea of what went wrong. Most of the time, the errors are fairly apparent.
Did you find any causality between the number of fire bets and win rate? Please say yes.
I would say that that's not a positive relationship.
How dare you?
So my approach with, I guess, tuning my bot comes in a couple stages. I start out with, I use Bazel mostly for figuring out what losses I've gotten recently. And I'll have a quick scan through the game to see if I can see anything obvious, like, getting stuck on a supply or a worker getting stuck or anything like that. And I go through this sort of minor phase of bug fixing obvious losses. But anything that's close where it looks like my bot didn't bug and I thought I was doing fine, like my build order was fine and all this, I'll usually send it, the replay to Antigua. But for the most part, most of the losses recently have been just from bugs. So we haven't been really analyzing anything recently. That's generally my approach, and that's what I'd suggest to most bot authors. Go through your losses and figure out what caused that loss and find a solution that isn't so strict and isn't restraining on your bot, like isn't like a super hard-coded, if this, do this. Find a solution that works and try to apply it to a couple builds that you have and see if that works in practice. One solution I had with my Zerg, for example, losing to two gates was to find a measure of how many sunkens I need to make based on how many enemy units I see. And that actually skyrocketed my two gate win rate. I can open 12 hatch into just some Zerglings into some sunkens and make mutas. And it's stupidly easy to win versus at least not the proxy variant of two gate. It's been pretty easy to win.
And I'll just make a note that for authors that are getting started, most of the errors that I see in bots, and I do a lot of the game review for some of the better authors on the ladder, and most of the errors are not things that you would think that are tricky or difficult or complicated. The vast majority of problems that bots have are related to underlying macro systems, workers, supply, building placement failures, things like this that almost have nothing to do with the combat portion of the game. The robustness of back-end systems is really critical to success as you get higher end on the ladder. And you really can't afford for buildings to just not build or to be supply blocked or miss large chunks of building workers, things like that that are, when you're an author and you're trying to come up with fancy techniques to win, oftentimes it's forgotten that StarCraft is often, at its basic form, a simple macroeconomic type game. If you have more stuff than the other guy and your unit control is decent, you normally are successful. And so having more stuff behooves you for trying to win.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it seems to me that Bazel proves to be a very useful tool for both authors. And since it has more games than SSEIT, it's a very helpful learning resource. And I'm glad that we have both BASIL and SSEIT.
Yeah, the high game count allows it so that people don't have to run private ladders. Prior to BASIL's existence, a lot of people were running internal ladder systems. And it's really an annoying thing to maintain a ladder for yourself that runs all 80 bots and all that sort of stuff. In BASIL, you get a significant enough game count just having your bot on the ladder that you can use their raw records to inform your decisions for a lot of that stuff. And you can spot check versus individual opponents, but you don't have to run the whole thing, which everybody sort of had to used to do at the higher competitive end, which is saving, I think, people a tremendous amount of time globally. And BASIL's, you know, probably within 6 months, BASIL's going to eclipse SSCAIT's total game count, which just really shows you the play rate and the amount of data that's being produced there. It's fantastic. And I spend a lot more time in the cross table on BASIL exported into Excel than I think I would like to admit. looking at results and which bots are better in this area or that area. There's a tremendous amount of data there. And as you get towards the top end of the ladder, understanding where your bot is strong and where it's weak and what opponents it's good against and what maps it has a poor win rate on and trying to understand why, a lot of that becomes really critical as you become more competitive.
I really want to emphasize how important it is that people realize how good of a resource BASIL is for figuring out what your losses are, because you are not playing one opponent over and over or local testing. You're focused, you're honed in on, oh, I lost to this bot locally, I gotta figure out why, I gotta figure it out. And you keep playing against it, keep playing and making changes and keep playing against it. BASIL is completely unrelated to what you are doing locally. It is not handpicked in any way. So all this data is, for the most part, just randomized good data. Like, it is, okay, I lost to this bot. It has no correlation to anything other than what updates I have made. It gives you the best resource you possibly can have compared to SSCIT and doing it locally. Like, it is completely unbiased to what you are focused on currently. If you lose to 2-gate locally and you're making some changes, and then all of a sudden you lose to 4-pool, BASIL will tell you. You'll make this upload, you will, you know, you'll see a game the next day, your bot is updated, and all of a sudden you have 3 losses to ZZK and he 4-pooled you and you didn't fix it. It is by far the best resource for authors right now, in my opinion.
No, I very much agree on that. To give you a short example, when I was doing a new build, a specific build, I normally test against the built-in vanilla AI, just to make sure everything, you know, works and there's no crash. But once you load the new version of your bot onto the BASIL, and because it has so many games running every day, you will see, even for this very same build order, sometimes you can see something you don't normally see, you'll never see in your local testing environment. Against the same race, you would expect that the bot does something, but no. So that's something I very, very much appreciate, just for bug spotting and finding potential crashes.
And it's amazing when you focus on one problem, sometimes you make things, like Grave mentioned, worse in other areas. You may beat the opponent you now have patched and done stuff against locally that you've run 100 or so games against in testing, but now all of a sudden this oddball bot that you've been beating for years now beating you because of the changes that you fixed. So it's always in flux, and it's a truly useful tool. And I'm really enjoying the current race on ladder. Seda, Crazio, and Lacutus are all three exactly tied with 2,571 ELO as of today. So it's a very tight race for the top.
Thank you, Bizil, for existing. And how you mentioned spotting bugs in replays, and that's a very fun point to talk about, because during the finals, or I'm not sure during the finals, but during some casts, even Seda crashed at one point. I think it was last cast, the finals, but I'm not sure. And I'm willing to bet that they tested it quite a bit, and still, even that could happen. And I think the root reason is because BWA API is at its heart still a hack and can behave erratically. It is quite hard to make a robust bot based on that. Not impossible, but quite hard. What are your worst experiences with this?
I guess we should start with me because of the sheer number of crashes and famous glitches and bugs that I have produced over the years. Most recently being using up freed memory. I think people forget that CIDA is this crazy, you know, rule-based C++ bot just like everybody else's, and that guaranteed there is something late game that they won't be able to find that causes them to crash. There is a screenshot that I think you'll see in the SSCIT cast coming up, because Purple Wave submitted a game between McRave and Purple Wave where my bot decided to start mass building nexuses across the map. It's just, you know, one of those crazy bugs where at 50 minutes into the game, I have no idea what happens. That's part of the issue I find with bot development, is that you can't just isolate one area of the game. You can't just say, I'd like to focus on late game. Because you can't focus on late game if you don't survive early and mid game. And you can't focus on late game if you win early and mid game. So, people got to remember that, like you said, this is just a hack and everyone's bot will crash at some point. Nobody is perfect.
Even Seda, with their massive budget and Samsung quality development and team, had a crash during the SSCAT finals round. And I'll tell you what, a bot that is designed with that quality and level of detail internally and has something like a three-game, I guess looking at the Bazel ladder, has a three-game crash rate out of like 2,406 games, that can still crash during a tournament in late game. You know, there are things that will happen to you as a bot developer, and sometimes they happen at an inopportune time.
Yeah, I mean, the worst experience for me was there was a crash with my bot that I think only happened once every 3 months or so. Actually, it only happened, I think, once on the Basel ladder since its start. Then I talked to Hannes about this this crash, and he said it has something to do with the order for which the deconstructor, you know, the destruction process was carried out. So, but then it's really rare to the extent that I cannot just reproduce it locally, even with the same opponent, and on the same map. I know the crash happened when, you know, when the opponent actually typed GG, and he thinks he lost the game, and he has some remaining buildings. So my bot was just trying to check, update the opponent's building, and you know, delete any building that does not exist anymore in that situation. So the window for this crash to happen is really, really narrow, and also my bot needs to win in that situation for the crash to happen. So the difficulty, the rarity of the crash was really contribute to this worst case, to the worst experience I've ever had. But I think, I hope, and I hope after this AIST, I can have some time to work on this, to fix this this crash.
So your boat didn't accept surrender; it just crashed. So it's not defeating the enemy dishonorably.
All right, nothing can be left behind. Everything needs to be gone.
Yeah, that's the only definition of victory.
Well, I guess for a top bot, you gotta do it.
All right. The thing I think would be very useful is some kind of save game load game functionality. Then you can just take a replay or save file or anything at the 10-minute mark and just drop in your bot and continue from that point onward. I don't know, I'm sure it's possible with the engine because we are very smart and we can do anything, but how hard would that be to program? I have no idea.
You have unknowingly stumbled upon a topic that I have talked about in a lot of depth.
Yeah, being able to just load up like your bot state at a very specific time in a game would be pretty. That would really push development in late game situations ahead very quickly.
So, there's been some thought about this on multiple levels. I'm not sure where to start. Okay, so one of the ideas is to use a professional replay and split it up into, for example, 10,000 chunks of time, right? And load a bot to play both sides and analyze the positions. And what that allows you to do is, of course, we have a pretty large repository of replays that are used for bot training pretty regularly. There's like 16,000 or something here. But what that allows you to do is take the 16,000 and turn it into a few million, right? By being able to start the games at different timestamps. So it expands your ability to use those games as part of a training set. You can also use it to test specific scenarios. So you can do, for instance, 8 racks versus 12 hatch is a very famous one. Bunker rush versus drone defense. And that's a very difficult problem to solve because there's so many different things that are little that happen in human play that you could sort of replicate by starting the bot at those different points. So you could give them experience in the different points of the rush rather than having to have them do the entire thing. Unfortunately, the tools to turn a replay at a specific timestamp into a save game that can then be loaded and played by the bots doesn't really exist yet. There's been some thoughts on how to do it. Some of them by the author of, what's it called? The BW Coach program did some efforts in this area. But it's not complete yet and doesn't fully work correctly. That's maybe something that exists at a future date. It is actually actively worked upon. I hope that I'm saying that that's the right name of the tool. But basically, it's a coaching program for players. It's designed to analyze what is going on live and give feedback, say, did you miss a worker here? Could you have optimized this timing? It's a really handy, useful tool. And I really appreciate the work that the author does on that front. But it includes some of the functionality to deal with and start at save states, but doesn't quite work correctly yet. And it's not designed to do it in mass as a tool either. You know, it's sort of you can do one at one specific time, and then, yeah, it's not going to complete functionality yet.
Yeah, I hope it will be. But even if you have that, restoring the game state and restoring your bot state are very different things because most bots, or I actually have no idea how many bots, but I imagine a lot of the bots keep track of things over time. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, some bots support loading at any point, but the majority do not. They only start support starting from the beginning. But that's something that would have to be updated and adjusted in a bot that would use a tool like this for training purposes.
Okay, speaking of Bazel and SSEIT, I think it's great that we have a new ladder, and I think even more tournaments or any events that inspires you or forces you to work on your bot would be great. We have a relatively few tournaments throughout the year, and they are sort of not very, very personal. I mean, not many bot authors go to AWID to witness their bot's performance in person, and that's very understandable. What do you think about it? How could this be improved?
Well, I'm, of course, with AIST, I'm trying to make strides in that direction to having more integration with the player community, having the tournaments being, at least my specific tournament, being more based around a professional tool and more sort of event-style tournament structure. I think tournaments generally come out of a need and a niche. You know, there's the sort of the academic aid, CIG, there's the student StarCraft SSC AIT, which is sort of run as a dual purpose, both student and professional league. To say that it's student only is really sort of a disservice to its size and importance. It really is much more than that nowadays. And then you have little stuff like AIT Team, which McGrave here runs, that it was more of a programming challenge. It really sort of depends on the need and what sort of niches still need to be filled in the community, I think.
I pretty much run AITT just as a break for most bot authors. I think I mostly started it just as a way for people to kind of get away from the drag of, okay, you know, what am I losing to? What builds do I have to adjust? Because honestly, it is a drain. It is a very hard mental drain to sit there for hours trying to figure out how can I win this matchup. So I think AITT was mostly made up with, you know, just a need for something really casual and fun and requiring a little bit more programmer skill rather than brute force skill.
For me, I guess I don't have too much to say on this because I work for this company, and you know, as long as the tournament requires open sourcing your bot, then that's a no-go for my bot. So really, throughout the year, there's only SSC AIT and AIST that would be possible for me to participate, and that's why, you know, I didn't participate in CIG or AID. But I mean, from a personal perspective, I think there could be one or more tournament per year that for bots that could allow bots to not open source. But beyond that, I think it'll be too much for me. I've gone through the preparation for the past SSC AIT, and at this point, I pretty much know if you really want to do well, you know, how much time it will require you to devote to this process. That's why I said, I mean, if there are more than four or five, then it's just too much. I mean, it would appear to me that throughout the year, I'm just merely preparing for those tournaments instead of focusing on my bot development.
That's an interesting point. And do you think with these tournaments, monetization of some kind would be an incentive for more people to participate? I'm not quite sure, because on the SC2 side, there are actually cash prizes for some tournaments, And it seems to me that it does not really affect the number of developers working on that.
I'm doing cash prize for AIST sort of as an experiment to see how that goes over. I think it does provide a level of seriousness to the tournament that, you know, people want to have get a little bit of prize money or whichever. But, you know, from a purely academic side of things, it doesn't really make a lot of a difference because a lot of the folks are university or professionally employed. But, you know, a good half or more of the community is just hobbyists. And, you know, they really do it for the pizza. And that's really about it. You know, there's not a lot of reward in it other than the enjoyment of working in the bots and, you know, testing their own programmer skills and abilities.
Yeah, I mean, for me, even if AIST did not provide any cash money, I would have determined to participate anyway. I think my purpose is rather, you know, not really for the money. I'm not saying money is a bad thing. I don't like money, but it's good. But I think more importantly, I think it's a very good opportunity for me to, you know, be competitive and, you know, learn from other bots and in the meantime also try to improve my own bots by identifying what kind of problems the bot still has or potential improvements that I can make to the bot by, you know, or, you know, experiment on new builds, new strategies. So this is just tournaments in general are very, very very, very good for these purposes. And I, like I said, I participate regardless of, you know, the existence of prize money.
And for authors who are considering getting into tournaments, my recommendation when people ask, you know, should I play in a tournament? The answer is always yes. You learn a lot. You learn about a lot about the process. You learn how to configure your bot for different situations. You gain experience. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily trying to win, but you will be improved as a developer and your bot will be improved because you take part, regardless of how well you do. So if you qualify for entry, if it's possible for you to qualify for entry for a tournament, I'd recommend that you participate in every one that you can, and you'll be better off for it.
Yeah, I feel like if people are, you know, doing bot development because of money and that's their incentive, they're in the wrong hobby. Try something else.
Yeah, and maybe if you even you win all the prize money, you divide it by the hours worked on your bot, you won't really like that number.
No, we don't talk about the hours invested in bots. There's almost no. I mean, have you ever tried to sit down and quantify the value in dollar value of what it would cost to replace most of these top, you know, 15 or top 20 competitors? Most of the bots would have valuations in the millions, likely, in developer time. But, you know, without a buyer, that doesn't make any sense, right? But the amount of software and complexity and code and lines of code and developer time that has gone into some of these top bots is truly incredible. And, you know, even if you were to offer a $50,000 prize to win a tournament, most of the people who would win the tournament would have probably, as a total, maybe they earned $3 or $5 an hour, even if with a $50,000 prize, if it existed. So it's pretty exceptional the amount of time that's been invested.
Yeah, if I made my hourly rate for the free time that I use on my bot, I would have probably tripled the amount of money I made.
We try not to talk about that. But the thing is you learn a lot of skills that you can use in your real life employment. And it gives you a unique environment where you can test your programmer and development skills and your organization skills, your project planning skills on a real project. and test the limits of what you can do in a competitive environment. And that's immensely helpful in what people take from that into their real life jobs and companies that they work for. And I think it's exceptional resume material.
That's very well put. And I personally have experienced this, that I used something I found out while developing my bot during my work and got commended for it. So yeah, develop bot kits because it improves your skills. All right, that's all the topics I planned for today. I think I'd like to conclude the cast now, if you don't have any of your own.
No, it's good. Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you for all of you for being here this week, and hopefully see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.